You are listening to the Punk News Podcast, and this was supposed to be episode 700, but I've been super busy, and everyone's been super busy, so this is not episode 700. It's 699 point something else. So, yeah. So that's what's happening. But a lot happened this week, so in a way that's good, because a lot happened this week. Namely, well, I'm here with M. Moore. M, what's happening?
Hello. I have returned from my my short, excuse me, vacation
thing. Well, where'd you go for vacation?
Went to London, Ontario, and saw Hozier, Marianas Trench, Deer Rouge, and Valley at Rock the Park.
How were they?
They were all really, really good. The sound was a lot better than I was expecting. It was so hot, but it was worth it. They were all worth it. They're very good. Very fun.
Well, I'm trying. Did I see any? I don't think I saw any concerts this past week. I don't think I did for the past 2 weeks. The last one I think I saw was that guy licking that lady's feet, which was weird, man.
Ah, the Foot Fetish show.
Did I see a show after that? I don't think I did. Let's see here. No, I didn't. That was the last one I saw. So anyway, that was kind of weird. Actually, I don't. The next show that I got coming up is Summer Soiree 8, the Dwarves, Schoolie D. And it's going to be awesome. It's July 31st in Philly. We've got exclusive records. We've got exclusive versions of records, but also exclusive records, including two exclusive Dwarves records you can only get at the show, an exclusive live album you can only get at the show. Also, two of the bands, Pink Soap and Lips of Coal, will have exclusive cassette tapes and sevens at the show. And the show itself is going to be awesome. So, yeah, man, come on out. It's going to be a blast. So, yeah. So that's what's happening. I don't think I've seen any shows before that. So, anyways, yeah. Big week at Punk News. Big week in Punk News. probably the biggest is the Descendants have regained control of Milo Goes to College. The listeners probably know that's languished under ownership of SST for maybe more than 40 years. SST didn't originally put it out. It was originally put out by New Alliance, which was Mike Watts' label and D Boone until Greg Ginn bought it. And then it became an SST label. And because Greg Ginn is such a mess, it's gone in and out, in and out, in and out of print. So until this week, a regular copy of Milo's Goes to College was literally selling for like $100, $80. An original press was like, you know, $300, $400. And now that there's a new one out, of course, those prices are going to drop because, it looks like SST just put one out in 2024. How do you like that?
Unless it's a bootleg.
It looks like it's bootleg. It might be bootleg, though, because there's actually some very, very convincing Descendant Milo's Goes to College bootlegs. So that might be a bootleg or not. What's particularly interesting about this, and I should say the new version is out on Org Music. They put out the Bad Brains record. And there's a couple things I want to comment on. The Bad Brains reissues, that is. What's particularly interesting about this, and it's remastered. But what's interesting about this is, and there's a thing called copyright termination, which means any artist, almost any artist, can get their album back from the label for free between year 35 and 40. So you say, they must have got it back from SST through copyright termination. But that doesn't make any sense because 40 years from 1982 would be 2022. We're already in 2025. And SST was putting out the record last year. So to me, that suggests that while this Descendants should have been a copyright termination, they probably didn't even know about it. It suggests that maybe there was threat of litigation because the only other way to get your record back after the copyright termination period is A, either buy it back, B, the label just gives it back to you, or C, threat of litigation. And I suspect that this was threat of litigation because why else? I mean, why Greg Ginn probably isn't just going to give it to him, is he? You know, and also it was kind of weird how there wasn't, I guess they didn't want to make it a public thing, but there wasn't really any like big announcement about it. Like they're like, okay, they're like, this is a when Circle Jerks got reissued, when 7 Seconds got reissued, when Subhumans got reissued, it was all over. Like this was just kind of just quiet. You know, it's like, Miley's College is back out. Now that's kind of Org's music's modus operandi. Even when they re-released the Bad Brain stuff, they made some noise, but not a crazy amount of noise, which kind of surprised me. Maybe they just figured this record will sell on its own, which it probably will. Unlike the difference between with the Bad Brain records, it didn't seem like that sold a ton, but that's because everybody already had the Bad Brains record and it was relatively easy to get. By contrast, Milo is much, much, much harder to get, you know. So I think they'll actually probably see a bigger sales pop with regards to this. Mm-hmm. And so to me, that's particularly interesting. Second of three things is they're doing a Punk Note edition. If the listeners might remember, the Org Music did Punk Note editions of the Bad Brains records, which basically means they took the album and they made it look like a Blue Note record in cover and style, which to me made sense for the Bad Brains because the Bad Brains, you know, come from punk and jazz. They start out as a jazz band, sort of, and soul and jazz, of course. So that makes sense. Bad Brains and Blue Note, you know. And so that made a lot of sense to me. And so I thought that was supposed to be specific for the Bad Brains. But now they're doing a Punk Note edition for Descendants, which that doesn't really – not that I'm complaining because I know a certain artist that does parody covers for a certain band a lot. but to me, like the Blue Note to the Bad Brain – to the Descendants connection doesn't – there's no connection there. It seems completely arbitrary and doesn't really make any sense to me. I would suggest – a different type of parody or parodies. This is not a parody. It's more of a, what do you call it? What do you call something? It's a parody, but it's not funny. Not satire.
But it's not funny.
Well, it's an homage, whatever you want. It's an homage to Blue Note. But there certainly is certainly a Bad Brains Blue Note connection. You know, I don't see any Descendants Blue Note connection. So and this is nitpicking. I mean, I'm certainly glad that Org is putting this out. I'm sure they're going to do a great job sound wise and production wise, but I would have preferred to see a different homage than Blue Note. Where's the connection there, you know? And I'll be interested in Moore's position on that. And also, I believe, and I'm almost sure, the Descendants are, and I'm actually going to confirm this while M responds, they are leaving on the track I'm Not a Loser, which is somewhat controversial these days, although I don't think it should be. But of course, as the listeners probably know, when the Circle Jerks covered the Descendants and the Descendants covered the Circle Jerks maybe 2 years ago now, The Circle Jerks recorded a version of Loser and changed the objectionable lyrics. But even with that, the Descendants didn't want the Circle Jerks to release that because they thought just even referencing that song might reignite the fire that, well, it's arguable on whether or not that fire should exist to begin with. So it's interesting that they left it here on the album, which I think is the right choice. But I found it, I guess they're kind of in a rock and a hard place, and that if they take it off, that's totally weird. But if they leave it, they are kind of subjecting themselves to the issue that they discussed with the Circle Jerks cover. So, Em, how are you feeling about this reissue? Is this a big deal? Why was it kind of quiet? And what's your opinion on my statements?
I think, I think this is a great reissue because again, like it's been so long since there's been a proper like release of it. And
well, to be fair, and there have been you're right. SST's been putting them out, but sneakily in limited quantities. Mm-hmm. Now it's widely available again, and the band gets paid for the first time ever, maybe.
Yeah, that's what I'm going for because like you can't properly release something if the band doesn't have the rights to it and they aren't getting paid for what they did, you know? So it's really good to see that coming back and them actually going to see the profits from it. And again, for all their hard work, and it is a seminal album, you know? So that's really, really good to see. I think Org Music's going to do a really good job with the re-release. I was so surprised seeing this on Punk News because it was so quiet. I thought it would be like everywhere. I thought it would be, you know, this, that, and the other thing because Descendants are a huge band, huge punk band, and you know, everyone knows this album, even if they don't, like even if they just know like the visuals, they still have a connection to it in some way. So I thought that was really, really interesting. And then with the inclusion of I'm Not a Loser, I don't think you can get around it because it was on the album originally, and this is the original album, you know? So I think it needs to be included in that sense. I do think when Circle Jerks covered it and they changed some of the lyrics, I think that was cool, and I think that should have come out.
I agree.
Because, again, like, we have this debate with, like, Fairy Tale of New York and stuff, right? And it's like, do you keep it as it is, or do you change it? And it was a Bon Jovi version, wasn't it, that changed it? That changed the lyrics?
Did he change it, or did he keep it the same? Let's take a quick look.
He changed it, I think, because there was a cover that we talked about a while ago where they changed it to "You're Cheap and You're Haggard." I think it was a Bon Jovi cover, because we talked about it on the podcast, and I was like, why is this band covering this song, kind of thing.
Yes,
so
he,
I
you're
oh,
right.
Sorry.
Bon Jovi
okay.
changed it too. You're a bum, you're a braggart, you've lost all your swagger. I don't need to go on. Actually, no, listen to this. Wow, here's the Bon Jovi version. You're a bum, you're a braggart. All right. You've lost all your swagger, and the world around town is you ain't much in bed. You're a squirrel cause you're nuts.
Oh.
You're a kick in the gut. Happy Christmas, my ass. I pray to God it's our last. So, ugh.
Oh no.
Wow. And Steve Lillywhite, the producer, he said, the worst ever version of the song. Sorry, John, embarrassing and pointless. Wow. Wow.
Oh my God. What a response.
For the producer, oof.
How's your confidence now, Bon Jovi?
He doesn't. I don't think he cares. But maybe he does care.
Maybe he does.
Care.
I don't know. Yeah, so I would like to hear the Circle Jerks changed lyric version of that song. I think it would be cool.
You think we ever will?
Ooh, I hope so. I really hope we do. I don't feel like we're going to, but I hope it's released. But I do think if it is released, it's going to be released on, like, some comp or something. So it's released, but it's, like, quiet, you know?
Yeah. That's the way to do it. Mm-hmm. Sneak it out, you know, or maybe throw it on a B-side somewhere or something.
Do you think we're ever going to hear it?
No, I don't think so.
No?
I'll tell you exactly why I don't think so.
Okay.
And this is in regard to is Pete's been quite clear. I think he's been quite clear. He's doing the Circle Jerks thing for his retirement fund, and I certainly think he's entitled to it. And
for sure.
And so if we can draw an analogy to Billy Joel, because certainly the Circle Jerks is as big as Billy Joel. And what do you think we'll see first? A Billy Joel greatest hits comp, even though there's already four of them, or Billy Joel rarities, of which there's at least an album's worth?
Another Billy Joe or Billy Joel comp.
Exactly, because you literally just put a different cover on the Billy Joel greatest hits comp, you'll sell way more copies than if you ever did a carefully put together assembled rarities comp. Because the fact of the matter is, for most bands, people want the most popular stuff, not the rarest stuff, you know? And so Circle Jerks, they're out there to make cash and have fun and make good music. And I think that's what they should be doing. So I don't think Keith is really that concerned with digging up Circle Jerks rarities, because there's actually a couple of very interesting Circle Jerks rarities. There's one called I'm Gonna Live, which is a track they released before Off Fell Apart. And actually, they actually probably recorded like a month or two before Off. I mean, I'm sure they recorded before Circle Jerks fell apart and Off was born. So this is about 2007 or 2008. It's a killer. It's actually probably their best song since Golden Shower of Hits. I mean, it's an awesome song. It's called I'm Gonna Live. They put it out on MySpace, and I ripped it off MySpace, and they never put it out ever since. And they should, if you ask me, they should just slap that on a single and put it out. It's an amazing, awesome song. There's also a Circle Jerks Jerns cover somewhere, I think. And check this out. There's a unreleased / released Circle Jerks live album where they cover two Black Flag songs, not Nervous Breakdown. I think they cover Depression and is it Six Pack maybe? I have it on a CDR. See what happened, Em, right near the end of the Circle Jerks, I believe it was Kevin Lyman of Warped Tour. He put together a show, but it wasn't a Warped Tour show. It was just a show. And I guess he had the band sign some kind of release that he could make a live album. So, Em, you won't even believe this. You could go on MySpace, and he had this widget on MySpace where you could pay to download a digital-only Circle Jerks live album, which I have, and it's awesome. And the Circle Jerks just slapped that on a record because it's awesome. But they haven't.
That's wild.
In a way, I don't blame them because it really isn't worth their money. So there's a whole live semi-unreleased album. There's a semi-unreleased Germs cover and a semi-unreleased Killer single. And also the Descendants track, you know. And so I think we really won't ever see any of those because Keith and the band are kind of focused on the, quote, big picture, not the minutia history. So I don't think we'll see it. So you got to be a maniac like myself to track these rare things on down, you know.
One day, all of the pieces will be together.
But on the other hand, Em, it is conceivable that one day the Circle Jerks might just sell everything, the kit caboodle, in which case someone might want to put out those rarities to make some extra bucks here and there and make as much money back as they can quickly, you know. I don't think that's going to happen, but it's possible.
I didn't think about that, but yeah, that's definitely a possibility.
And what's your opinion of the punk note for the Bad Brains? And what's your opinion of the punk note for Descendants?
I think for Bad Brains, it makes sense. For Descendants, it doesn't. I agree with what you said. I'd like to know the decision-making process that went into it.
It almost feels kind of lazy. You know, let's just do punk note again, you know?
Yeah.
Although, I mean, see, Trust Records, which puts out the Circle Jerk stuff in 7 seconds, and what's the other big one? SSD. There's one other big one on Trust. DFL, of course. There's another one I'm forgetting. Trust Records, their whole thing is they kind of want to be like the Smithsonian Folkways, which is kind of the canonization of certain bands, you know? And so perhaps Org is like, okay, well, we're going to canonize these records. And actually, I'm going to be very cocky in 1 second. They're like, we're going to canonize these records by giving them the look of these legendary blues albums. But the blues albums, I'm sorry, not blues, jazz. But the jazz albums that are on Blue Note, like, they all kind of look the same just because they're on the same label. You know what I mean? It's not because they're not like anthologies, you know? And so so essentially it's Org Music saying we're the Blue Note of punk, which to a degree I appreciate that statement, but I think it's too convoluted to carry across the Blue Note look to different bands that really don't have a connection to jazz. I would prefer a certain different homage to the Descendants, you know.
What would you prefer? Like, what would you put as an homage?
That's a good question. Like, the Descendants, and I guess, like, you don't want to go funny because you're trying to make it seem worthwhile, which it is, you know?
Yeah.
That's a good question. So, if we trace the Bad Brains are a jazz band, or started out as a jazz band, so we trace them back to Blue Note, then I think we got it. And the Descendants are one of the first pop punk bands, and they're really not that far. I mean, they're only 5 years after, or 2 years after the birth of punk. So I guess we have to trace them back to rock or punk. So I mean, rock or pop. So I'm saying maybe like a Beatles homage. What do you think of that, Em?
Ooh, okay.
But then again,
I can see that.
But then again, Bad Brains hypothetically are influenced by jazz. Descendants aren't necessarily influenced by Beatles. Descendants are influenced by kind of AM rock and surf music, you know? Exactly, Em. You hit the nail on that. Beach Boys. That's what I would like to see. But Beach Boys is a band, not a label.
True. Didn't they have a label though?
You know, they probably did. Most of their big hits were on Capitol. But I don't know if there's any rock labels that have a super identifiable look like the Blue Note records do, you know? So I think I would break the rule and do Beach Boys as opposed to label centric. You see what I'm saying?
I think so.
So for the Descendants records, I would do Beach Boys homages. So that's my take.
I think that would be cool. It would fit well. But also, you know, they had holding company and record label that owns the intellectual property rights of the Beach Boys called Brother Records. What were you going to say?
I'll point out that I'm really just nitpicking, and I it sounds like I'm criticizing Org, and I am one half of 1% criticizing Org Music. What I'm saying is, I think they're a great label to handle this. I'm sure it's going to be a great job. It looks great already. The prices are right, $28, $12 for a CD. Can't argue with that in 2025 So I think you're doing a great job, and I think everybody should go buy it. So it sounds like I'm giving them thumbs down. I'm giving them a thumbs up. I, being the ruler of the universe, would have done a slightly different special edition cover. That's what, So that was cool, man. That was a long conversation about well, it's a big deal. I mean, it's a big deal.
Yeah.
He's another big deal.
It's a good thing.
We got to talk about this guy. We've been forgetting to talk about this guy for a while. We got to talk about this. Firefest has sort of come to an end. Billy McFarlane, let's backtrack. Of course, I'm sure the listeners know, but I'm going to go super fast. Billy McFarlane is this whack job. He threw a festival in the Bahamas then?
The first one? I think it was supposed to be. Yeah.
In the Bahamas or somewhere tropical. And it was called Firefest, and it was super expensive, and pretty much all the bands canceled, and people literally had to be hellevacked out of the thing. It was a total disaster. It turned out that he committed wire fraud and other fraud, and he actually went to jail for like 2 or 3 years for fraud. And also, while he was awaiting sentencing, he committed other crimes as well, of selling fake tickets and that kind of thing, and got more time for that. After he got out of jail, he said he was going to launch Firefest 2, which was delayed for a year or two. And then he said he had licensed the name Firefest to a music streaming service. And then we had this guy, I forget the guy's name. Remember the guy's name, Em? I should look it up. The
Heath something.
Heath, okay. With some guy named Heath that apparently owns, it looks like a kind of expensive hotel down in Utila in the Bay Islands. And he was going to throw a what they call Firefest pop-up, which was like a 7-day vacation, but they wouldn't tell you what exactly was going to happen, and they wouldn't tell you who was going to be there. And we had him on the podcast, and I'm not going to talk about him in a second. But then after that, Billy McFarlane put Firefest up for sale on eBay, and it sold for $245,000, which on one hand sounds like a lot of money, but for something with as much notoriety in the name is nothing, you know. And he still has $26 million in debt and restitution to the victims of his crimes. And then he said, I like this. Firefest is just one chapter of my life story, and I'm excited to move on to the next one. I always like when people do something wrong, and they're like, well, that chapter of my life is over. And I was like, well, how about all the people you hurt? That chapter of my life is over, you know? Like, you don't get to decide when you move on. You know, the victims do, you know? So it appears that the Firefest, the owner or the purchaser was not revealed. And so it looks like the Firefest saga is over. Maybe sadly, this has been my second favorite story ever that we've covered. The first being Woodstock 2010 or whatever it was. So M, do you think, A, who is buying Fire? I can't imagine the name is worth any. I mean, I think the name is worth negative money, frankly, you know. Who do you think is buying this? Do you think we ever will see Firefest, or is this just someone burning cash? And what do you think of Heath? And I can kick off the Heath conversation if you want. If you want to kick it off, let me know. But what did you think of Heath, who we had on the podcast about 3 or 4 or 5 weeks ago?
So with the Firefest being sold on eBay, of all places, it's like, I want to know what went into this decision to put it up on eBay, you know? Like, was it just, I need to be rid of this right now? Somebody please, for the love of God, take it off my hands, you know? Or was it like planned or what? Because it just seems really weird to be using eBay as a way to sell your rights kind of thing to something like that.
And I think he literally couldn't sell it. Like, because I knew there was a couple sales that fell through. I think he couldn't sell it. So he just threw it up on eBay, and maybe he thought that would be kind of a buzzy kind of thing. It was the only way he could sell it, you know?
Sure, that makes sense. For people buying it, I think it's either somebody bought it as a joke, but I mean, like, that's a lot of money to spend on a joke, or somebody's bought it and they're gonna like maybe not do a festival, but they're gonna license like bottles of water or like cheese slices, you know, like something that we associate with the first festival. Or maybe it's somebody who does want to throw a fire fest or is actively throwing a fire fest and now has Billy out of the picture. You know, just to use the name. So that would be my kind of two cents. So is the pop-up thing still happening? Like it says it still seems to be happening, so it's still going ahead.
I Googled it and the website was still up, and that's as far. And
Okay.
the Instagram actually had very few posts to begin with, so it's difficult to go by off of that, you know. But the website is still up. Doesn't mean that it's still. Yeah, actually, the Instagram only has two pictures, which is weird. And the website is, as of right now, September. I mean, September, July 16th, it's still up.
Okay, so we can assume it's still going. So whoever bought it, I think is either associated with the pop-up or is going to become associated with the pop-up, just so they can secure the rights to it or whatever it was. As for the guest we had on the podcast, that was one of the, I think, strangest conversations we've ever had.
It was strange, especially the second half.
The second half, the first half wasn't as bad. The second half did get very much off the deep end there a little bit. If you ask somebody a question and they kind of, excuse me, loop their way around it, that's always a always raises eyebrows,
Indeed.
you know? I mean, unless it's something that makes sense to do, like if you ask somebody like whoops, where they're from or something, and they might not be in a position to tell you, that makes sense. But as something that's a public-facing event, and you ask something about the public-facing event, that does it doesn't breed confidence by any means. With this, I do wonder how Billy selling this has affected the pop-up, if any, because there was a part where he was like, oh yeah, well, one of the big things is you're going to be able to like come here with him and go snorkeling with him or scuba diving with him or whatever it was. So
Great, great. Yeah.
I'm just kind of like, again, is this Billy washing his hands of everything Firefest? So he's just like gone from all of it now. And like you said, yeah, that's the, or I guess like he said, that's just one chapter of my story and I'm on to the next one and I don't care about anything else anymore. John, what do you make of it all?
Well, I don't know. This would be my guess. My guess is that the hotel licensed the trademark specifically for this event. And I would guess that Billy McFarlane is contracted to make like an appearance like any celebrity. You know what I mean? Like, so the fact that it's Billy McFarlane is almost arbitrary. I mean, it could be Charles Barkley or it could be Celine Dion or whoever. You know what I mean? Like they're actually like separate agreements, you know, that'd be my guess. So assuming the thing is still going on, whoever owns Firefest now, when you buy all the licenses. So whoever bought it has to honor the license for the hotel guy to use it, unless there's some kind of weird clause, not weird clause, escape clause, which there very well may be. I don't know. This is just pure speculation. So even though it's kind of being presented as Firefest, I think it's essentially just we've licensed the name, you know, with regards to that. Second, would I go? Absolutely not. I mean, I can't be who I can't imagine who'd be dumb enough to go. Third, I think the dude was kind of creepy, frankly. When we started the when we took on the interview, I thought it had the potential to go wonky, and I was almost hoping that it did, and it did go wonky. And that, although let me comment on the first half though, I did appreciate how I mean, he was a little smug, honestly, and kind of a know-it-all, but it did seem like he knew a lot about booking shows, and if he was booking like the Bowery and stuff. And then he knows what he's doing, booking, presumably. Although some people are really good at bullshitting. But I didn't get the impression that he was. I actually
I
think he
didn't
knew,
either.
I feel like he knew a lot about booking shows. And he actually did answer a question I've had for a long time that I've struggled with. And the question is how come when I reach out to booking agents, the number they throw at me is if I sell out, then I break even. Why is that the number they're throwing at me? And when I negotiate, they shut down. And his response was, which makes sense, is because the band doesn't really want to do the show. So if they can get like a windfall, they'll do it. But if they're just making regular money, it's not worth it to them, which that makes sense to me. That kind of answers the struggle that I've had with most booking agents, frankly. But with regard to the guy himself, we did give him the benefit. Honestly, I gave him the benefit of the doubt. But like we kind of gave him an open-ended form and said, okay, well, how do you want to take this? And of course, we had to ask him, I think it's weird that he's working with Billy McFarlane, a convicted fraudster, and a repeat convicted fraudster. And not only convicted fraudster, a guy that apparently has no shame, but also no, what's the word when you feel sorry for something that you've done?
Remorse.
No remorse whatsoever. Like, he's, now that chapter of my life is over. You know, like, well, you screwed over a lot of people. Rich people with too much money. So he's not the absolute worst, you know. better than people that screw over poor people, which is it's a lot of those people. But that being said, he still comes off as kind of a douche. And if you're going to work with someone, I mean, I'm not against the idea of, you know, some tropical getaway, but why work with Billy McFarlane? Why not work with Punk Rock Bowling? Why not work with the Circle? Why not do the Circle Jerks Holiday Getaway? Hey, that sounds pretty good. The Circle Jerks Holiday Getaway. Like, why not them or the Damned or something? You know what I mean? Like, why Billy McFarlane? He couldn't answer that. Why Billy McFarlane? Like, let's talk about that for a second. And then like, the guy, presumably the guy knows something about business. He apparently owns a hotel, a complex, right? And he's organized shows at some of the biggest venues in New York City, right? He organized a Metallica show. So he obviously knows what he's doing. Why Billy McFarlane? That seems so wacky to me.
I really think it's just for the name and it's just for kind of like the notoriety. Because there was one point during the interview where he said something like that, where it was like, I want to generate like the publicity for it. So I think that's kind of what's going on. Or so he said something along those lines.
Does that ever
obviously
work?
Paraphrasing.
Does purposely embracing bad PR, does that ever actually work?
I think it can work. In certain circumstances, like I think that if, well, all of the places that are like rumored to be haunted and stuff, a lot of them embrace that, right? And it's like people want to go for like the challenge of it, or they want to go to see if it's real or whatever. Like they're going to be creeped out, and the venue or the like hotel or whatever it is embracing that and kind of playing up to that because, you know, like there's stories, right, where it's like, oh, this place is haunted, and then people just don't go there and whatever. Like that would be the only case that I could see of kind of like negative publicity working to your advantage.
But see, I agree with you, but I would say that like people want to, like going to a horror movie, people want to be spooked, you know.
Mm-hmm.
This is like we're engaging with this douchebag. Like I mean, I guess not mm-hmm. to bum everyone out, the only time it really ever worked, I would say, is Trump. Who basically said, I am awful. I'm an awful, like he literally says, not literally, but I'm an awful human being. And Republicans, let's just drop our facade of doing the quote moral right thing or even the religious thing. And let's just be horrible and evil. And they all said yes. You know what I mean? Like they admit that they're horrible and evil. It's crazy, you know? So, I guess that's kind of the template. And that brings us back to this guy, Heath. Who near the end, man, he really creeped me out. Or not creeped me out, but he icked me out. I got the what's that band? I've got the ick or whatever. Saying
Panic Shack.
I've got the ick.
Yeah.
And that so I'm like so like what I said to him, like, so why are you working with Billy McFarlane? And he's like, well, America loves a good comeback story. Look at Trump. And I was like, look at Trump. And I was like. Like you're comparing him to one of the most despicable people in the 2000s. Where are you? I don't see how that is going in favor of your argument, you know. And then he compared him to Ronnie Radke, who I wish I'd known at the time. I thought Ronnie Radke was just some douche. I mean, I know he was a douchebag.
Well, he is.
Reverse, but also apparently he's got. Let me pull this up because I don't want to get sued by Ronnie Radke for defamation. But give me a second here. He compared him to Rodney Radke, who has been at least accused. And I don't know, has he? Let's see, what has he been convicted of? Man, just look at this guy. I can tell you, douchebag. Let's see here. Here we go. So let's see here. He's been arrested for hitting his girlfriend, and he's been accused of some other things too. So yeah, the guy's wow.
What was he? Oh wow.
He got in a fist fight, and an 18-year-old guy got shot in the fight, and he was part of the fight.
Yep.
And the guy died.
Yep.
And then he hit his girlfriend after that, Sam.
Not a good person. Not a good person at all.
And then there's other allegations that yep. I'm not going to get into. So, I mean, the guy's an awful human being. And yep. So to say, well, listen, the America loves a comeback. Look at Rodney Radke. It's like, I don't know how comparing the guy that you're backing to two absolutely awful people. And I don't know how that is. How is that supporting your point as to why you should work with the guy from Firefest? Right? Like I said, why are you working with the guy from Firefest? And his response was, well, look at Trump and Rodney Radke. Look at these two awful people. It'd be one thing if he said, look at Danny Trejo, who used to be a gang member and then turned his life around and became a famous actor. You say, okay, you know, that makes sense, you know. But no, he compared him to awful people who remain to be awful and have no remorse for their horrible actions whatsoever. So that's where things got really weird for me, Em. And the fact that he went right to Trump and then right to Ronnie Radke, like he didn't even like compare him to like Joey Merlino, a Philadelphia ex-mobster that now runs a cheesesteak place, which I'm not a fan of, where at least he's doing something that appears to be legitimate. It's like, no, you know, look at these other awful people that are still being awful and doing awful things. That's what my guy's like. Things got really weird there, Em. And they did. And here's my take on it. Is I suspect that he's so in awe. Like, I suspect he's kind of like these super Republican people in that being nice or being good or even doing the right thing as other people isn't part of the equation. What can I do to win and even be awful for enjoyment? And I think the guy we had on, his perspective is so warped that he thought we'd be like, yeah, Trump, he had a comeback. Well, he did have a comeback because so did Hitler. You know what I mean? Between World War One and World War II. Like, just because you have a comeback doesn't mean that you're good. Lots of bad people have comebacks, you know? The missing element is that you did something bad and you're sorry for it and you make amends for it. Not that you just come back, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think his perspective is so warped that he genuinely thought that we would say, like, yeah, I agree. That's just like Trump. When I guess he forgot that we're in the world of punk and Trump is – I mean, even outside the world of punk – I mean, in any world, Trump is awful. But in punk, he's certainly awful, you know, and Ronnie Radke too. So that was weird, Ed. That was really weird. And I don't know that he got what he wanted out of the interview.
I don't know what he wanted out of the interview, to be completely honest.
Well, that's a good point. You're right. Like, what did...
Because, like, that's what, I kind of thought was, like, did he want to be on and be attacked so that he could, like, defend himself and be like, look at these people, they've said bad things about, like, you know, our event and you can't trust them or, you know, like, something like that? Or did he... Is it under the no publicity is bad publicity?
I think maybe he was trying to do the Gene Simmons thing. I get, and this is my guess, is like, well, you're kind of an ass and you're kind of a jerk, but you have a certain flair that people accept. But the only reason people accept that is because, and not under my perspective, but under their perspective, there's substance under there. Like, I don't like Kiss the Band, but a lot of people like Kiss the Band. So Gene Simmons being kind of a dick does kind of extend the brand. You know what I mean? Where maybe that's what he's trying to do. Sam, did he come on wanting a brawl? Or did he genuinely think we would agree with like his Trump analogy?
I don't know. There were certain things where like I wasn't sure if he was trying to get a rise or waiting for a rise or kind of what was going on. very hard to read in that sense.
It was, you're right, he was hard to read. Like, and here's where I get doubly confused is if you just get some, like, I've interviewed some genuinely off people, some genuinely odd people, and even some genuinely insane people. And you can't, sometimes you can't parse out what their objective is, you know? And it's because they're genuinely odd, you know? This guy presumably is not odd. I mean, although he's odd, like, he has a business with multiple buildings, and right? So he's obviously not insane, or at least he's sane enough to run a business and to book Metallica. I mean, you can't be a knucklehead and book Metallica, right? So you would think that someone that has that wherewithal would have a better wherewithal or objective as to coming on to our show, or a better angle or a better pitch. He had no angle and he had no pitch. That's what it is, you know?
Like that's what's throwing you off.
Right, like there's no angle and no pitch, you know? And if he came on and was obnoxious on purpose, like Gene Simmons, I'd say, oh, okay, he's playing the heel and that's how he's trying to get attention, you know? Or if he came on and said, John, I understand why you might not Billy McFarlane, but look at this and look at that, and he's given this much to charity, and not that he has, you know, and he's doing this, and you know, but he didn't have that either, you know what I mean? So he didn't play up the good angle and he didn't play up the bad angle. It appeared he just wanted to say Billy McFarlane deserves a second chance, like Trump, and he appeared to want us just to agree to that, I think.
Maybe, like, I do think that, yeah, like, I can see that making sense. It's so hard to know what somebody's motivations are, you know, because, like, usually they kind of show through a little bit. And with this, there wasn't that. Like, you know, how sometimes you think you're just having a conversation with somebody, and kind of the next thing they're like, hey, here's this thing I want you to do for me. Or whatever, and it's like, where did that come from, right? And it's like, that was the intent of the conversation, right? Don't know.
I would say it's you. I would say that someone's motivation is usually relatively clear, you know.
I would agree.
And here his motivation is to sell tickets to his thing. You know what I mean? Yeah, and not to beat this to death. His motivation is to sell tickets to his thing, or at least get notice. But he appeared to have no plan to do any of that, and he appeared somewhat surprised when we didn't buy his Trump analogy and his Ronnie Radke analogy. And I'll point out, I owe no obligation to a guest to tell him what we're going to do before the interview. And in a way,
Oh, for sure.
from pure journalistic ethics, maybe you shouldn't tell him what you're going to do. You know, when Barbara Walters or when Tom Snyder interviews someone, they don't tell them what they're going to talk about beforehand. In this instance, I did say, you know, we're going to ask about Billy McFarlane and see like what the deal is. Like, we're not going to trash you. It's not a,
Yeah,
we're
exactly.
not going to just trash you off the bat. But we're going to ask about Billy, and so like he was on notice that it was going to be a real interview and not a puff piece. Not that we would ever do one. And I'll point out that he reached out to us quite aggressively, mind you.
Very.
And right, like he reached out to us very aggressively to be on the show. And I said, okay, man, you can come on to the show. I'm very interested in this, but we're going to ask real questions. And he appeared to have no plan, and was surprised and confused and kind of freaked out. But then, and I sort of understand all that, but then he's smart enough to run a business in another country, a hotel. What's running a hotel is complex. So there's something just off, man. There's something just off.
Unless
And
it,
go ahead.
nope, unless it was an act. That's the only thing I could
But to
think.
what end?
That I couldn't answer.
I mean, would anyone hear our interview and say, wow, that sounds like a great time. I'm going to go buy a ticket. Or would anyone hear that interview and say, wow, this sounds like an amazing disaster I have to go to? Like, he didn't even paint it as an amazing disaster. He just kind of couldn't explain anything, you know?
I left with feeling more confused.
I actually didn't feel, and I'll wrap this up and then we'll move on, not to be dead, but it was an interesting interview. Is I feel as though he's banking on the no PR, no PR is all PR is good PR or whatever. But I actually don't think that's fundamentally true. And you can get a lot of comments on the internet and no one buys tickets to your thing, you know. And I mean, and there's many things where millions of people are talking about a show positively or negatively online, and you go to the show and there's no one there. So I think he made that fundamental error, and I think maybe he's a little odd. Earlier I did say he's got the wherewithal to run a business, so he can't be that odd. But on the other hand, some business people truly are odd, and so maybe he's a little A and a little B. Maybe he is a little odd, and maybe he thought no PR is bad PR, which I don't agree with that. So anyways, I'm glad we had him on. I was actually kind of hoping that he would have some kind of rationale for what he was doing and paint himself as a human being somehow, but he didn't do that at all. He did the opposite. Like I was almost hoping he'd be like, you know, John, I've known Billy since, you know, 1997. We went to summer camp together. He's actually not that bad of a guy, or he got wrapped up or something. Or John, Billy is a truly odd person, and he's wrapped up in these wacky things because he's an odd person, but he's also capable of greatness. But we got none of that. We got, this guy's a scumbag and he's not sorry, but we should give him a second chance. And that's all we got.
Like, oh, these people who are bad.
What he couldn't answer was, why should Billy McFarlane get another chance?
Because that's what you do in America, apparently.
Yeah, but should Charles Manson get a second chance, you know?
I mean, he kind of did.
Charles Manson?
He never got out of prison, but, like, the amount of people who covered his songs and got them more into the mainstream.
Or how about John Wayne Gacy? Should John Wayne Gacy get a second chance?
Probably not.
Well, there you go. So anyway, it was odd. And, I will agree with Em in that we didn't get a whole lot of clarity. We got, like, no clarity, frankly. We did get clarity. The clarity that I got is, I think it's probably going to be a crappy vacation. And I think if you spend money to go, you're not going to get your money's worth. That's what I think. That's the clarity, you know. Sorry to draw this out, but, like, if he said, John, here's the awesome things we're going to have, you know. Charles Barkley's going to be down there with us, you know. And we're going to have a Ferris wheel and a petting zoo and ski boat races and fishing and beach volleyball tournaments. I say, oh, okay. You know, but he had no selling points at all.
No. And that was very surprising. I thought there'd be a bunch of, like, little, you know, this, and oh, that too, and this other thing.
I think if you're going to play into the horribleness of Firefest, you have to make it horrible, but, like, amusingly so, you know.
Like, we are serving gourmet grilled cheese.
Yes. But actually, grilled cheese is delicious, so. If I went to a festival, they were like, here's some grilled cheese. I'm like, oh, yeah, nice. Anyways, M, what bands or label or organization would you like to go on a Caribbean getaway for? What band or label or organization?
Ooh, that's tough.
I've got one that I don't want to answer because there's a 1% chance I'm actually going to try to make it happen in a certain manner. So I'm not going to say my number one pick.
Okay.
But I will say, actually, I'll give a couple number two picks.
Sure.
2A, Alternative Tentacles Fest. A bunch of alternative tentacle bands. That'd be Jello. Yeah. That would be awesome. Second.
That'd be sick.
I would even go, how about Hellcat Fest, man? A bunch of Hellcat bands. That'd be kind of cool.
That would be cool.
And let me do one more. Let me do one band one. Like, what band has a lot of incarnations or something like that? M, how about this? Oh, M, I got the killer.
Okay.
Danzig Fest. Misfits, Sandman, Danzig the Band, the spin-off bands, the Undead, even Jerry Only solo bands, Doyle's bands, you know, anything Misfits, Elvira, she can come on down, you know, it'll be a blast. That's what I'm saying.
Elvira would be cool. Elvira would be very cool.
Of course, I don't really want to hang out with Misfits fans, to tell you the truth.
you have enough, like, once a year.
And do you think the Misfits will ever play Punk Rock Bowling?
I think they will. I think that would be a good guess for the 2026 lineup.
I think
baseless speculation.
I think the Misfits would be one of their bigger expenditures, but at this point, I think it's probably within the realm of possibility, and it'd be awesome to see.
It would be pretty cool.
I would go to Punk Rock Bowling if it was Friday, like, I would even go to Punk Rock Bowling. Friday, Social Distortion. Saturday, Misfits. Sunday, Social Distortion. I would go just to see the Misfits there.
They do a Social Distortion cover set.
Oh, but I would still go. I would still go. And what band or label or whatever would you want to go on a 7-day Caribbean getaway?
7-day Caribbean getaway. Well, with, like, labels, I think Get Better Records would be cool because they have such, like, a diverse roster. Like, you'd hear so much different or so many different, like, genres of music and kind of, like, approaches to it. And I think that'd be pretty neat. And there'd be such, like, a community kind of vibe there. I think that would be really fun. Then I think Green Day would be fun because they have so many different iterations of the band and, you know, like, I think they could put on really, really high energy shows every night and they could curate a really cool lineup. I also think Pop would be really fun because they're doing their, like, Mega City Madness thing right now, which is 6 shows in 6 days across Toronto. And to see that over a week, I think, would be really, really, really rad. Because they also have, like, really good bands opening for them and kind of showing the scene and everything. So I think them on a, like, 7-day thing would be really cool. So those are my answers for now. But there'd be, like, so many, you know?
And my mind just got blown. Did you know that Mike Dirnt and Trey Kool are not original members of Green Day?
Yes.
I didn't know that. And Trey didn't even join the band until 1990.
Yeah, they had a different drummer for a good chunk of their career.
Are any of the other guys, like, not on the recordings? Like, is there any single that has, like, different people on it?
Yes.
Here we go. The first album has Joff Kiffmeyer, not Trey Kool.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
The first drummer. I'm trying to remember how many.
It's like, sorry? Raj Pujami is one of the guys, early guys. Anyways, I'm not a huge Green Day fan, as I say over and over. But actually, M's suggestion at Green Day Fest is actually is a great idea because A, you could have, like, original Green Day, you could have modern Green Day, you could have Pinhead Gunpowder, you could have their cover band, you could have the Network. Like, there's all these different incarnations of Green Day and spinoff bands that could make a really cool, like, 3-day, 4-day thing, which would be really fun.
It would be. I do think that MCR would also be really, really cool. But I just don't know how it would, like, I think it would translate well. But also, if they wanted to do something a little bit more theatrical, I think it would be a little bit difficult. Maybe not, though. Because that'd be sick. That'd be so cool.
I never knew. I always thought Green Day was the same three guys forever, but it's not. And it's not at all.
No. But they're the ones that stuck.
Well, there's at least one other story that I want to cover. Extended discussions today. Jane's Addiction are suing Perry Farrell. And it looks like Perry Farrell might be suing Jane's Addiction back.
Yes.
As the listeners probably know, Jane's Addiction broke up on stage in, I think it was November. And frankly, a really weird scene. Dave Navarro and Perry Farrell were yelling at each other on stage. And then Perry kind of appeared to attack Dave. And then the security guards dragged Perry off stage. So Jane's Addiction, the three members, Dave, Eric Avery, and Stephen Perkins, are suing Perry for $10 million. They're saying that Perry's actions cost them the majority of the tour and also ruined an upcoming album they were going to work on. M, do you think it's the true end of Jane's Addiction? Where do you stand on this? And what do you think of the band suing each other for one band member's costing the other money, hypothetically? Allegedly.
I think this is definitely the end of the band. I think it's very rare that you bounce back after suing each other.
Where, the Misfits did.
Well, excuse me, yeah. That's true, but I think the Misfits have more fans than Jane's Addiction.
Maybe. That's a tight race. Interesting.
Or more like devoted fans, maybe, is the
Probably
way to put
true.
it. But yeah, I don't think this is something they're going to bounce back from, like just based off of how they ended with a fight on stage or an altercation on stage. Tensions run high and who knows what state everyone's in, but like I think if it was just the altercation, they could come back from it. I think that it's moved to this point, they can't. Because I think now at this point, it's more about a lot of things instead of just one thing. You know what I mean? Like, I think this is, I'm suing you for all of the damage that I think you've caused me forever. You know, like that was a straw that broke the camel's back. And I've sunk so much of my life and my time and I am into this when I could have been doing something else, or I could have been with other people who may or may not be here anymore, you know, like things like that. So I think the hurt is overflowing a lot more and it's just taking the form of like money. Because how is it worded here? Because I don't see how Harry Farrell's actions cost them $10 million. You know, aside from like, here's all of the past shit as well.
Well, I think what they're saying is that by him being, we'll use the word unstable, that they couldn't complete the tour and therefore they have lost income and expenses from the canceled show dates.
True. Yeah, I guess that would add up to roughly that figure. Because they were playing big spaces, that's true.
I'm surprised it's not more. I would think Jane Detection is making more than $10 million a tour, because you got to remember, I mean, that's $10 million gross, not net.
True. Maybe the 10 million means that they want him to see sense. And they're like, that's their kind of like, we're giving you sort of another chance. I don't think so, though. I don't think so. I think this is the end. What are your thoughts on the matter?
Yeah, I think it's the end. I think this will settle. And actually, no, let me take it back. I'm gonna say it's not gonna change addiction, because bands certainly have bounced back from crazier things than this. And you know, suing is a very 2020, 2010, 2000s kind of thing. Bands in the 80s and 90s. I mean, look, Charlie Watts punched Mick Jagger through a window once, and he might have died if Keith Richards didn't catch him by the leg. And you know, that didn't end the Rolling Stones.
Yeah,
But then
true.
again, maybe the blood wasn't as bad there, you know. And also, the Rolling Stones are not quite as maniacs as Jane's Addiction. But I'll say it's not the end. If Perry Farrell has certain issues, which it appears that he does, if he's able to fix those issues, then I'll say it's not the end of Jane's Addiction.
All
Because
right.
if they came back again, that'd be huge, Em. That would be good, bad PR, you know. I mean,
Yeah.
one of the reasons why the Misfits reunion was so huge was because Danzig and Jerry only hated each other for years. Although, as it turned out, they actually didn't hate each other as much as people thought they did, but they didn't get along. And so that, I mean, if the Misfits broke up and Danzig and Jerry only were just friends, the reunion wouldn't have been as big as it was. And the fact that they didn't like each other and got back together is what made it so huge. So with Jane's Addiction, I think there's a possibility of that there. I'll give it a 1 out of 2 chance. That
Would
being
you
said,
go?
would I no, actually I wouldn't. I've seen, like, I love Jane Says and I love Being Caught Stealing. And I thought like Jane's Addiction would be like my favorite band ever. But every other song is just unlistenable. It's like Perry Farrell going, and like a broad note just hangs there. And I'm like, where's the music, man? Like, I don't know how you write, same as with Big Audio Dynamite, is I don't know how you write these two killer songs and every other song is just unlistenable. And it really is. So I've seen Jane's Addiction once, and it was Jane's Addiction, Nine Inch Nails, and Street Sweeper Social Club, which was Boots Riley's band with Tom. Actually, it was just Rage Against the Machine with Boots Riley of The Coup.
Ooh.
And I've seen Jane's Addiction, so no, I wouldn't go. I mean, if it was free or if I was paid the review, I would go. But if it was like $20, I would go, but like not if it was like $300 or something, which it would be. And so, yeah, so that's Jane's Addiction. I would say it's kind of amazing that if you watch the video where Perry freaks out on stage, it genuinely looks like Dave Navarro is hurt. Like, not angry, not pissed off, hurt that Perry is acting unusually, you know?
Yeah.
Like, go watch the video. Like, Dave Navarro looks genuinely hurt and disappointed, you know? Which, in a way, I don't blame him. It's like, dude, we're raking in millions playing music. Even if we don't like each other, just get up there and sing the tunes, cash the check, let the fans have fun, and go your separate ways. Now, it'd be interesting to see what Perry Farrell's response is. I mean, what do you
that
think?
Would.
Like Dave Navarro's stance in the band is Perry was acting like a maniac and he's got problems. And so we're mad at him because he freaked out. But though, after it happened, Perry Farrell posted an apology saying, I need to take care of some things, is what he said. So that shows that he agrees with Dave's perspective, right?
I think so.
Like
I would say yes.
If he said, like, the other guys were being jerks, or if he says there was technical problem that wasn't me, then you could say he's got a different perspective. But the fact that he accepted blame, I guess, shows that he feels as though he's got an issue. So what could his possible perspective be that isn't the same as the rest of the band? Though I will say, I interviewed Perry Farrell once, Sam, about 10 years ago, and he was cool as hell. Actually, it just goes to show, most rock... Sorry.
Are you okay?
Yeah, I'm drinking water. Most rock stars are rock stars for a reason. Some people you'll interview, some bands you'll interview, and they're like, oh, I can't do an interview at 3 p.m. Can you do 7 p.m. on Thursday or whatever?
Yeah.
Perry, like, true rock stars, or you'll have an interview for 4 p.m. and they sign on at, like, 4:07 or 4:15, or, oh, I'm having dinner or lunch. Can we do it in a half hour? True rock stars, and I found this to be unequivocally true for every true rock star that I've interviewed, and by rock star, I mean Perry Farrell, Alice Cooper, Rob Halford, Joan Jett, Lemmy, anybody that caliber or higher, the Jonas Brothers. Yes. I interviewed at the height of Jonas Mania.
Oh, I did not know this.
And actually, if you want to talk about the Jonas Brothers in a second, I will.
Sure.
So I interviewed, you know, true rock stars. If they say interview at 4 p.m. and they're going to sign in at 4 p.m. on the dot. And they're really not going to make you do too much work. They're going to have interesting stuff to talk about. And no matter what you ask them, they're going to come up with a good answer, you know. They're going to give you the material. Interviewing rock stars is among the easiest interview there is, unless they're trying to dodge something, kind of like Alice was, which I'm so happy I nailed him down. That's probably my proudest interview moment ever. And he was cool. He was cool about it. You know, he saw what I was doing, and he reacted, not in an angry way. I'm being vague. Basically, Alice is like, I never talk politics. But I'm like, Alice, with songs like Billion Dollar Babies, with songs like Dead Babies, certainly there's a social commentary there, if not a political commentary. And I backed him into a corner, and he had to admit that there is some sort of social political commentary there, even though he doesn't like to admit it. And he was cool about it. And actually, I think he sort of respected me more after I kind of nailed him down. But anyways, true rock stars, they're there because they know if the article is a great article, it looks better for them, you know.
Oh, yeah.
So when I interviewed Perry, he was a true rock star. And actually, he wanted to talk longer, and his PR person had to cut it off because he had another interview, which was interesting, you know. So when I interviewed Perry, I don't know him. But when I interviewed him, he was super cool, and he was a true rock star with interesting viewpoints, stuff to say, and he was very punctual, then at least.
No, for sure. It's also like these people have been doing this for so long. Too. They know what goes into the press and what's what happens on your side of things too, and it's a nice little relationship.
Also, And this is off on a tangent. And this is one of my few banes, or not banes, but pet peeves is, in my experience, rock stars and bands that have been around a while that make money being bands are so much easier to work with than bands that are, quote, trying to make it, or bands that haven't made it, or bands that are flavor of the month. It is interesting, you know? Like, I've worked with some genuine rock stars, and they're so much easier to work with than cool bands, if you will. You know what I mean?
I think so.
Also, on booking shows, and who do you think is more likely to be demanding? The touring musician that makes their money as a touring musician, or the local band that doesn't play that many shows?
The local band that doesn't play that many shows.
Every time. And I almost don't want to book local bands anymore. Because it's like, you realize you're the one getting the gift playing this show, not the touring band. You're the lucky one, not the touring band, you know. Anyways, pet peeve of mine. So here's my Jonas Brothers story. So I interviewed the Jonas Brothers at the height of Jonas Mania. And they were kids then still. And
oh, sure.
And not little. No, one was married. I mean, I think is there four Jonas Brothers or three? I always get confused.
There's three in the band. There's four Jonas Brothers.
So then there was three. The oldest one was married. And so basically what it is at 6 a.m. I had to go to some fun run.
Oh no.
And the oldest one didn't have to go because he was married, so he was allowed to be in the hotel with his wife. And Joe's the middle one, right?
I think so. I can look it up real quick.
I'm pretty sure I interviewed Joe, and actually I know I interviewed Joe, and I briefly interviewed Nick. And let's see here. Well, he's married to Sophie Turner. Wow, that's pretty good for him, man.
They got divorced.
Oh.
Yes.
Poor Joe.
Yeah. Joe Jonas is the middle brother.
Okay, yeah. Wow, he dated Demi Lovato and Taylor Swift. Wow. Wow. Joe's my new hero, man. I should have hung out with him at the fun run. Joe, let's go see. Where did he date Taylor Swift? I'm sorry, I got to look this up. Maybe he was dating Taylor Swift. Well, let's see here. Joe Jonas dated I'm sorry, listeners. I have to look this up. Joe Jonas dated Taylor Swift in 2008. I think that's when I interviewed him. Holy shit. How old was Taylor then? She might have been too young. Give me a second.
I think, aren't they about the same age?
Yeah, but I mean, she might have been too young for me at the time. Let's see. In 2008, this is getting weird, people.
Yeah.
In 2008, Taylor Swift was a little young. Anyways. She's like 20, so a little young for me at the time. I was about, I was only about 26 at the time. That's not that bad, you know. So anyways.
She was 19.
Let's see, and I was 25 then. So let's see here. Let me see if I can still read it. Pull up Joe Jonas, The Patch, Mountain View. Let's see if it's still there. Wow. I interviewed Joe Jonas.
Is it?
I interviewed Joe Jonas the same. Yes, here it is. Oh, wait, no. Yeah, here it is.
Is it?
I interviewed him in 2010.
Send me the link.
And so anyways, I accidentally called Joe the oldest brother in this article, but he's not the oldest brother. He's the middle one. I didn't know at the time. So anyways, I interviewed Joe Jonas and Nick Jonas, and they were doing a fun run at like 6 a.m. Then they had to go to like a minor league baseball game and like throw out the balls of the minor league baseball game. Then they had to go to a concert that night. And honestly, they looked so tired, and it really they didn't look like they were having fun. You know what I mean? Who the hell would be at a fun run at 6 a.m. when you did a concert last night at like midnight? You know.
True.
So anyways, the point being is, why interview the Jonas Brothers? They were nice. Actually, Joe was nice. Nick was kind of a dick, but they were nice. And you don't realize, and it's actually kind of messed up, Rich, is real messed up, how packed these, quote, kids' days are. Like, they work the shit out of these kids. And so when people make fun of Britney or Justin Bieber or Chris Carter, not that I necessarily think they should get a free pass, but you have no idea the pressures and the amount of time. Like, they don't get to be kids. You have no idea the pressure, the demands, the creepiness, the people trying to get stuff out of them is. It's when you're 17, 18, 19, it's almost unfathomable. So, I feel people have kind of backed off kid stars a little bit. And I feel like there's not as many kid stars as there used to be, which is good. Yeah. But it really is kind of a messed up kind of thing, you know?
It really is.
Joe's out there hustling, man. Sophie Turner, Taylor, Demi Lovato, Gigi Hadid. Wow. Man, poor Joe, man. Wow. Now he's living in a trailer or something. It sucks. Em, if Joe Jonas asked you out, would you go out on a date with him?
Let's see. He is 35.
He's 35.
Yeah, I think so, because it would be, at the very least, a good story. And he seems like he'd be a decent person.
I bet he actually probably, honestly, I bet he is a nice person. When I interviewed him, he was a nice person. And, you know, sometimes you can kind of tell someone's a douchebag or not, you know? Fire pop-up fest guy felt like a douchebag. Joe seemed nice, you know? All right, Em, I'll see if I can dig up my old PR contact and maybe I can set this up. Well, do you want Joe or Nick, Em? Which Jonas brother do you want?
Sure, let's go Joe.
Let's see.
Why not?
Is Nick married? Let's see.
Nick's married to, I think, Priyanka Chopra.
Oh, I think he's married. All right, well, so Joe it is, Em. We'll set it up. Unless you want like the Biebs or somebody. You want to go out with the Biebs?
Ew, no. He's married for one. And ew, no, for two.
How about Pete Davidson? You want to work on that one?
Pete Davidson just announced him and his girlfriend are having a baby.
He's not married.
Yeah, but no, I'm good.
All right, I'll set up with Joe. We'll set up with Joe. He's got the curly hair, that thing that all the kids have these days.
Love a good curly hair.
Who do you think was the cause of the divorce, Joe or Sophie Turner?
Mutual.
Now,
because I'm trying to remember what about it, because I know I saw something about it, but I don't remember the details. What were you saying?
They got a kid. Anyway,
kids.
Let's not get too TMZ here. Anyways, whatever, man. Anything else you want to talk about in tonight's episode?
Well,
why did I interview Joe about the stupid fun run when I could be interviewing him about Taylor and Demi Lovato and Gigi Hadid? I should just be like, yo, man. I mean, and it was funny. It was very much like a little kid event, you know?
Sure.
I wouldn't even say what I'm thinking. Go ahead, Em, anything else you want to talk about?
Oh, no. I can picture it. It's not good.
I should be like, Joe, you're the man.
You would have gotten kicked out of a fun run.
I probably would have. Anyways, so I interviewed Joe Jonas, Em. Em, who do you think was cooler? Rob Halford, Joe Jonas, or Lemmy?
Like that, I'm going to say Rob Halford.
Trick question, they were all super cool.
That's so nice.
Let me think. I'm just waxing nostalgic here. I mean, who do you think was cooler?
Okay. Yes.
Joe Jonas, Joan Jett, or Dave Alvin of the Blasters?
I think that Joe and Joan were very cool because you've said Joan was a tougher interview, but she was good overall. So I think it's a tie between them.
I would say Joe was cooler in that he was more in the talk. Joan's like a brick wall, you know. Mm-hmm. One more, Em. Joe Jonas or Doyle of the Misfits?
Oh. I'm going to say Joe Jonas.
Yes, Doyle was a dick, but I like that he's a dick because that's like his persona. Like his persona is that he's mean. You know what I mean? So I didn't mind that. Although apparently he's like really like that, and not a dick, just very tough, cold. He seemed angry. Like I was asking genuine questions, and he just seemed angry. You know, like he gives like one word answers. You know, but I like that because he's Doyle, and he's not supposed to be nice. He's Doyle. You know.
It fits the character kind of thing.
And last one, who's a better interview? Joe Jonas or Jello Biafra?
Jello Biafra.
By like 1,000. Anyways, anything else you want to talk about, Em? Anything else you want to discuss before we wrap up tonight's show?
My Chemical Romance are on tour now. They have a fucking insane show, and they've invented a full-ass language. So I am trying to learn that. And I've been talking about this nonstop for since Friday, which was when their first show was.
Are you going to go check them out? Are you going to catch them on tour?
I am very excited, yes.
Oh, you are? What show are you seeing?
Toronto.
Oh, nice. That's awesome.
Yeah. Are you going?
No.
Because Alice Cooper's opening Philly, I think.
Yeah, I was going to reach out to the PR person, but I forgot. And I'm seeing Alice in like a couple of weeks after that, so.
You should go.
Well, there we have it. Everyone should go see My Chemical Romance. And we will see you.
Yes. Next week.